Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Hello and welcome to the program for January 22nd, 2019, which in the Hebrew calendar equates to the 16th of Shvat 5779. I am Walter Bingham. These days it's not possible to ignore the policies of the United States, because if the US sneezes, the rest of the world may catch a cold. Their decisions have great influence on world politics in general and on Israel in particular, and even more so on economics and trade. So we have to keep an eye on it, and I will. Later in the program, I'll tell you how, after 80 years, Germany is once again insulting me. There is also a report of one organization that tries to rehabilitate youngsters in Jerusalem who have fallen by the wayside into a life of drug, drinks, and prostitution. Don't miss that. Last week, I brought you President Trump in the raw. His aims, intentions, and dreams to make America great again, as his slogan goes. Most important for him is the security of his country, and that includes proper control of the southern border with Mexico, which is, as is now widely known, extremely soft, resulting in vast masses of immigrants now being illegally in the country. President Trump is determined to remedy this by building a physical barrier, and in order to force the Democrat opposition to agree, he partially closed down the government, with the result that thousands of employees are not receiving their salaries and other services. His Democrat opposition is furious. Fortunately for him, essential services like air traffic control and border security personnel are very patriotic and motivated to work. But it's now 32 days, the longest period of U.S. government shutdown in recent U.S. history, and it's likely that even those motivated workers can no longer endure without pay. Trump's dilemma is that he cannot afford to forego his election promise to build a wall. He cannot lose faith by his loyal supporters, and therefore he may be tempted to declare a national emergency with all that entails. All of this because the Democrat leadership refuses to agree and believes that Trump is manufacturing a crisis where none exists.
I'm John O'Vandor.
And I'm Ross Nichols.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind, a show that broadcasts all the weekly goodness that flows like milk and honey from the Holy Land straight into your ears with humorous and happy news stories.
We're going to be talking about...
What are we going to talk about?
A person who takes out a terrorist with a pizza tray.
And there's Donald Trump talking to a turkey. What's that about?
A 71-year-old rock star is a staunch supporter of Israel.
Join us on our program, Israel on My Mind.
Every Thursday.
Here is Walter Bingham.
The Democrat leadership refuses to agree and believes that Trump is manufacturing a crisis where none exists, and that it is inhumane to refuse entry to asylum seekers, and that there are more effective methods to control the border, and that the $5.7 billion Trump requests would be wasted on a wall or fence or barrier. They want more manpower, which is cheaper. Trump argues that with a 2,000-mile-long border, a large part of it unfenced, it is impossible to place a guard every 100 meters. The masses will just walk through, including the criminals, gang members, and drug pushers. Anyway, he says, they are economic migrants who are looking for a better life in the United States. Real asylum seekers with a case would apply through the official channels and then, most probably, receive asylum. By the way, I mentioned last week, but it's worth saying again, that the Democrats want to increase foreign aid from $54 to $66 billion. Trump insists on spending taxpayers' money to aid the home front. This is what Chuck Schumer, the minority leader in the Senate, said before Trump became a presidential candidate in 2006.
Illegal immigration is wrong, and a primary goal of comprehensive immigration reform must be to dramatically curtail future illegal immigration. Second, operational control of our borders through significant additional increases in infrastructure, technology, and border personnel must be achieved within a year of enactment.
And again in 2009.
We must create a system that converts the current flow of primarily low-skilled illegal immigrants into the United States into a more manageable and controlled flow of legal immigrants who can be absorbed by our economy. Let me elaborate. The first of these seven principles is that illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. Until the American people are convinced that we will stop future flows of illegal immigration, we will make no progress on dealing with the millions of illegal immigrants who are here now and on rationalizing our system of legal immigration. That's plain and simple and unavoidable. When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration, which the American people overwhelmingly oppose. If you don't think it's illegal, you're not going to say it. I think it is illegal and wrong, and we have to change it. Above all else, the American people want their government to be serious about protecting the public, enforcing the rule of law, and creating a rational system of legal immigration that will proactively fit our needs rather than reactively responding to future waves of illegal immigration. People who enter the United States without our permission are illegal aliens, and illegal aliens should not be treated the same as people who entered the U.S. legally.
That contradicts heavily the sanctuary cities and sanctuary states that were established before Trump became president. Schumer continues,
to the advocates for strong, fair, effective, comprehensive immigration reform, and I'm certainly one, I say to you that the American people will never accept immigration reform unless they truly believe that their government is committed to ending future illegal immigration. And any successful comprehensive immigration reform bill must recognize this fact.
Isn't that interesting? All that was said before Donald Trump became president. And hear what they say now with Trump as president. Here is Chuck Schumer today.
This president just used the backdrop of the Oval Office to manufacture a crisis, stoke fear, and divert attention from the turmoil in his administration. My fellow Americans, there is no challenge so great that our nation cannot rise to meet it. We can reopen the government and continue to work through disagreements over policy. We can secure our border without an ineffective, expensive wall. And we can welcome legal immigrants and refugees without compromising safety and security.
Did you hear that? We can welcome illegal immigrants. That's different from what he said in 2009. Listen again.
The American people will never accept immigration reform unless they truly believe that their government is committed to ending future illegal immigration.
Isn't that what Trump intends to do?
The symbol of America should be the Statue of Liberty, not a 30-foot wall.
These same politicians who strongly oppose President Trump's border wall today signed the Secure Fence Act in 2006 into law, which provided for hundreds of miles of fencing to separate and secure the southern border. Among the signatories were Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and Chuck Schumer. Referring to this law, Obama said on the Senate floor in October 2006, "The bill before us will certainly do some good." He praised the legislation, saying it would provide, quote, better fences and better security along the borders, and would help stem some of the tide of illegal immigration into this country. Listen.
Those who enter our country illegally and those who employ them disrespect the rule of law. And because we live in an age where terrorists are challenging our borders, we cannot allow people to pour into the U.S. undetected, undocumented, and unchecked. Americans are right to demand better border security.
This shows that well before Trump came on the scene, Democrats were prepared to spend large amounts of dollars to keep Mexicans and Central American illegals out of the United States, and that it's not the wall to which they object, but to Donald Trump as president. We shall hear a lot more before the U.S. government will reopen. But now to other matters. I've already on several occasions talked about the Kinder transport through which some 10,000 Jewish children from Germany, Austria, and the part of Nazi-occupied Czechoslovakia were taken to England as a result of cooperation between German Jewish organizations and British Jewish charities following Kristallnacht, the night of the broken glass. I was one of those children. It is now 80 years since our parents were forced to look on as the international express trains pulled out of the stations, carrying among its carriages one or two filled with children. Yes, the British stipulation was unaccompanied children only, no parents. Most of the 10,000 never saw their parents again because war was imminent and Jews suffered the horrific fate. But they were the heroes, sending their children to safety while their future looked bleak. The children's ages were between 3 and 16. Now just imagine the little ones asking, "Why are you leaving me, Mummy? What have I done? Why are you sending me away?" And the parents waving goodbye with a heavy heart. While the parting of the older ones, I was 15 and a half at the time, was sadness mixed with a sense of adventure, the trauma of being alone, of having to leave parents behind, soon set in and never left us. It has affected the lives of all of the Kinder, even to this day. So now imagine the insult after 80 years, when only an estimated maximum of 1,000 are still alive and in their 80s and 90s, the Germans decided to, quote, compensate us for the trauma suffered to have had to part from our parents, with a payment of 2,500 euros each. An absolute disgrace. But what is even worse is that the British, who have conditioned to accept children but without parents, have not seen fit to make good that unspeakable immoral act, even within their humanitarian intention. Not even an apology. My official document, issued by Britain, states, "Admitted to the United Kingdom for educational purposes." That implies a temporary status, evidenced by the entry stamp, which reads, "Leave to land granted at Harwich this day on condition that the holder does not enter any employment, paid or unpaid, while in the United Kingdom." Of course, the war intervened and changed everything. Looking at those events through the prism of 2018 and the illegal immigration crisis, the British missed a great opportunity to absorb and save the lives of educated Western Jews who would have been an asset to the country. And if you ever go to London, look for the statue of the Kinder opposite McDonald's on Hope Square at Liverpool Street Railway Station. It's dedicated to us. Today, I want to tell you about an organization that cares for teenagers who've lost their way and who need gentle and careful nurture to help them find their way back into society.
The last time I heard any reference to Crossroads was about a by now discontinued soap opera on British television that centered around a motel at a road junction near Birmingham in England and was all about its internal politics and intrigues. But the Crossroads about which I want to talk to you today is quite different. It's about young people at a critical point in their lives and about having to make decisions, a kind of crossroads in their lives deciding in which direction to continue.
Hi everyone, this is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
The Democrat leadership refuses to agree and believes that Trump is manufacturing a crisis where none exists, and that it is inhumane to refuse entry to asylum seekers, and that there are more effective methods to control the border, and that the $5.7 billion Trump requests would be wasted on a wall or fence or barrier. They want more manpower, which is cheaper. Trump argues that with a 2,000-mile-long border, a large part of it unfenced, it is impossible to place a guard every 100 meters. The masses will just walk through, including the criminals, gang members, and drug pushers. Anyway, he says, they are economic migrants who are looking for a better life in the United States. Real asylum seekers with a case would apply through the official channels and then, most probably, receive asylum. By the way, I mentioned last week, but it's worth saying again, that the Democrats want to increase foreign aid from $54 to $66 billion. Trump insists on spending taxpayers' money to aid the home front. This is what Chuck Schumer, the minority leader in the Senate, said before Trump became a presidential candidate in 2006.
Illegal immigration is wrong, and a primary goal of comprehensive immigration reform must be to dramatically curtail future illegal immigration. Second, operational control of our borders through significant additional increases in infrastructure, technology, and border personnel must be achieved within a year of enactment.
And again in 2009.
We must create a system that converts the current flow of primarily low-skilled illegal immigrants into the United States into a more manageable and controlled flow of legal immigrants who can be absorbed by our economy. Let me elaborate. The first of these seven principles is that illegal immigration is wrong, plain and simple. Until the American people are convinced that we will stop future flows of illegal immigration, we will make no progress on dealing with the millions of illegal immigrants who are here now and on rationalizing our system of legal immigration. It's plain and simple and unavoidable. When we use phrases like undocumented workers, we convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration, which the American people overwhelmingly oppose. If you don't think it's illegal, you're not going to say it. I think it is illegal and wrong, and we have to change it. Above all else, the American people want their government to be serious about protecting the public, enforcing the rule of law, and creating a rational system of legal immigration that will proactively fit our needs rather than reactively responding to future waves of illegal immigration. People who enter the United States without our permission are illegal aliens, and illegal aliens should not be treated the same as people who entered the U.S. legally.
That contradicts heavily the sanctuary cities and sanctuary states that were established before Trump became president. Schumer continues,
"To the advocates for strong, fair, effective, comprehensive immigration reform, and I'm certainly one, I say to you that the American people will never accept immigration reform unless they truly believe that their government is committed to ending future illegal immigration. And any successful comprehensive immigration reform bill must recognize this fact."
Isn't that interesting? All that was said before Donald Trump became president. And hear what they say now, with Trump as president. Here is Chuck Schumer today.
"This president just used the backdrop of the Oval Office to manufacture a crisis, stoke fear, and divert attention from the turmoil in his administration. My fellow Americans, there is no challenge so great that our nation cannot rise to meet it. We can reopen the government and continue to work through disagreements over policy. We can secure our border without an ineffective, expensive wall. And we can welcome legal immigrants and refugees without compromising safety and security."
Did you hear that? We can welcome illegal immigrants. That's different from what he said in 2009. Listen again.
"The American people will never accept immigration reform unless they truly believe that their government is committed to ending future illegal immigration."
Isn't that what Trump intends to do?
"The symbol of America should be the Statue of Liberty, not a 30-foot wall."
These same politicians who strongly oppose President Trump's border wall today signed the Secure Fence Act in 2006 into law, which provided for hundreds of miles of fencing to separate and secure the southern border. Among the signatories were Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and Chuck Schumer. Referring to this law, Obama said on the Senate floor in October 2006, "The bill before us will certainly do some good." He praised the legislation, saying it would provide, quote, "better fences and better security along the borders, and would help stem some of the tide of illegal immigration into this country." Listen.
"Those who enter our country legally and those who employ them disrespect the rule of law. And because we live in an age where terrorists are challenging our borders, we cannot allow people to pour into the U.S. undetected, undocumented, and unchecked. Americans are right to demand better border security."
This shows that well before Trump came on the scene, Democrats were prepared to spend large amounts of dollars to keep Mexicans and Central American illegals out of the United States, and that it's not the wall to which they object, but to Donald Trump as president. We shall hear a lot more before the U.S. government will reopen. But now to other matters. I've already on several occasions talked about the Kinder transport through which some 10,000 Jewish children from Germany, Austria, and the part of Nazi-occupied Czechoslovakia were taken to England as a result of cooperation between German Jewish organizations and British Jewish charities following Kristallnacht, the Night of the Broken Glass. I was one of those children. It is now 80 years since our parents were forced to look on as the international express trains pulled out of the stations, carrying among its carriages one or two filled with children. Yes, the British stipulation was unaccompanied children only, no parents. Most of the 10,000 never saw their parents again because war was imminent and Jews suffered the horrific fate. But they were the heroes, sending their children to safety while their future looked bleak. The children's ages were between 3 and 16. Now just imagine the little ones asking, Why are you leaving me, Mummy? What have I done? Why are you sending me away? And the parents waving goodbye with a heavy heart. While the parting of the older ones, I was 15 and a half at the time, was sadness mixed with a sense of adventure, the trauma of being alone, of having to leave parents behind, soon set in and never left us. It has affected the lives of all of the kinder, even to this day. So now imagine the insult after 80 years, when only an estimated maximum of 1,000 are still alive and in their 80s and 90s, the Germans decided to, quote, compensate us for the trauma suffered to have had to part from our parents, with a payment of 2,500 euros each. An absolute disgrace. But what is even worse is that the British, who have conditioned to accept children but without parents, have not seen fit to make good that unspeakable immoral act, even within their humanitarian intention. Not even an apology. My official document, issued by Britain, states, admitted to the United Kingdom for educational purposes. That implies a temporary status, evidenced by the entry stamp, which reads, leave to land granted at Harwich this day on condition that the holder does not enter any employment, paid or unpaid, while in the United Kingdom. Of course, the war intervened and changed everything. Looking at those events through the prism of 2018 and the illegal immigration crisis, the British missed a great opportunity to absorb and save the lives of educated Western Jews who would have been an asset to the country. And if you ever go to London, look for the statue of the Kinder opposite McDonald's on Hope Square at Liverpool Street railway station. It's dedicated to us. Today, I want to tell you about an organization that cares for teenagers who've lost their way and who need gentle and careful nurture to help them find their way back into society.
The last time I heard any reference to Crossroads was about a by now discontinued soap opera on British television that centered around a motel at a road junction near Birmingham in England and was all about its internal politics and intrigues. But the Crossroads about which I want to talk to you today is quite different. It's about young people at a critical point in their lives and about having to make decisions, a kind of crossroads in their lives deciding in which direction to continue.
Leap of Faith with Penina Taylor.
We live in the age of information, but not inspiration. If you're like me, you're looking to be inspired, to reach higher, to connect more, and to grow. Well, if you want to get warm, you need to stand close to the fire. And if you want to catch fire, you need to stand close enough to get hit by the sparks. Join me, Penina Taylor, as we walk with people who have embarked on a spiritual journey towards Torah. We'll uncover what started them on their journey and what truths they discovered along the way. So prepare to be inspired as we take a leap of faith every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Israel News Talk Radio.
Now, here is Walter Bingham.
Do you involve the city's social services? And if so, how do they assist you?
The Municipality of Jerusalem has been exceptionally supportive of our project from the beginning and continue to be the professional supervision of our project, the youth division of the municipality. And beyond that, we deal with the welfare department, with the Ministry of Education. Anybody who's out there, we're in touch with them, and we work hand in hand with them because I believe that we're not here to reinvent the wheel. We're here to utilize the services that are out there, work together with any organization that's working, doing outreach on the streets. We work together with them.
Now, perhaps the most important question, what is your success rate, and how long does it take to help them to get back on track and to leave that debilitating lifestyle behind?
Success for me is a very subjective word. For me, success is when the teenager comes in and says, I made it to work today. That's a success for a kid who hasn't made it to work, who's never been able to get himself to get up in the morning, let alone anything else. So for me, success I see every day. In terms of getting kids back on the road, I'd say for the most part, there might be a handful of kids who we were not able to help at all. But the effect that we have on kids, no matter if it means that they have a job full time and are perfect when they leave us, but we definitely give them the tools that they need to set them on the path wherever they're going. And we have a lot of kids now at this point, because we've been open for 6 years, that come back to the center and can say to me, thank you so much for the help that you've given us. We're doing really well. This is what's happening with me. And I wanted to let you know that it's based on the fact that you guys helped me back then, even though you didn't think that I was okay when I stopped coming here. For the Israeli kids, if they come here at a much younger age, 14 or 15, and we start working with them, and we work with them a lot of times until they're 21. For the American kids, the kids who are coming from outside of Israel, they come when they're 18 or 19 or 20. So we only see them for 1 or 2 years, and we work with kids from 13 to 21. So those kids have a shorter amount of time in any case to be able to work with us, and we hope that by the time they turn 19, 20, 21, that we've already given them enough tools and they're on their way.
Is there recidivism? Going back after having been with you and after having had some help from you, eventually drifting back to where they were in the first place?
I think that there's no answers for who succeeds and who doesn't. There are kids who I've worked with who were getting high every day for 2 years, sleeping outside in the parks, on rooftops, not in touch with their parents, who woke up one morning, decided they wanted to get better, and that was it. And it had nothing to do, I don't know how much it had to do with any one person speaking to them. Why did that kid succeed? And the kid who really wants it, who seems to really want it, who is doing a little bit better, can't quite get it done. They can't quite get past that mark. Life is about taking 2 steps forward and sometimes hitting 10 steps back, but getting to that balance where it's 10 steps forward and 2 steps back. And if you can teach a child that there are ups and downs in life, you've given them everything that they need.
You said that there is no crime involved in this. How do these children sustain themselves living outside and on rooftops and so on?
I was relating specifically to drugs. In terms of crime, there is crime. I'm sure that there's kids who steal. I'm sure that there are kids who do other things, destroy property, loiter. I mean, there's a lot of things that they do that are against the law other than the drug use. In terms of subsisting, fortunately for the Jewish community that is Israel, we're a very warm community. And unlike the big city, there are people all around this country that if you say to them, I need a place to stay for Shabbat, there's going to be a family that's going to let you do that. There are kids who help out each other. It's a very warm culture here. We help find a program for them. We help find a school for them. We help find them a rehab if they need it. We help them find a shelter if that's what they need. So there are programs in the community that when a teenager is ready to let themselves be put into a program, we're right next to them with, these are the 10 options that are available. These are the 2 we think are most right for you. We take them from beginning to the end. And even when they get into that program, we continue to be involved with the school or with the program, hand in hand with that program, to help that teenager stay there.
When they leave here and go back to wherever they live abroad, do you keep in touch with them, or do they keep in touch with you?
We have an internet site, and so they can go to the internet site, and we have emails. And a lot of them, they write us emails, they let us know, they give us phone calls. If ever they come back to Israel, the first stop that they make a lot of times is to come over and say hi, tell us what they're doing. When I go to fundraise in New York, a lot of times I'll run into a lot of them. It's amazing to connect with them and see how they're doing and how they look at their time in Israel and how they look at their relationship here at Crossroads.
So that's very satisfying for you.
There's an amazing amount of satisfaction in this work, but teenagers are the best population to work with.
Now for the honest and frank stories of 2 young people who are being helped at the Crossroads Center. These, just 2 of hundreds of Jewish children, illustrate vividly the necessity for and the value of the work of Karen Green and her organization. The names have been changed to protect their privacy. David, it's very nice of you to come and discuss your problems with me. Did Crossroads approach you, or did you come here because you heard of them?
I knew the owner for a few years. and I was never really in contact with them at all. And then I ended up getting arrested. And when I was sitting in the jail, the boss came and saw me and offered a help. And finally, I decided to take a help.
Why did you get arrested?
I was selling drugs.
Where were you selling them?
In Jerusalem. Most of Israel, but mainly in Jerusalem.
How did you get into that situation? I hear you have a British accent. When did you arrive here?
I came here about 4.5 years ago by myself, and then slowly parts of my family came to Israel as well. And when my brother and sister were young, they also used drugs, and I guess I kind of saw it and took an example from them. And I got into it myself from a young age in England.
How does one get into this drug culture? Were you meeting with other people outside? How does it work?
You can say there's two types of drug addicts. There's the type of drug addicts that do it to socialize with people, and there's also the type that honestly have a problem and are addicted to it. I was one of the people that I tried it once from the age of 12, and I got hooked, and I couldn't stop as much as I wanted to. And I met a lot of people that were just doing it to be social with people, to go out, and they could do it once a month, and that was enough. For me, it wasn't enough to do it once a month.
Was that through a pusher outside the school?
No, where I grew up wasn't a Jewish area at all. And when I was young, my family weren't religious. None of my friends were Jewish. Didn't have any Jewish friends. All of my friends were non-Jews. And I saw what they were doing, and no one ever forced me. I did it out of my own will, from what I saw from my brother and sister.
Have you made Aliyah?
Not yet. I was supposed to go to the army and make Aliyah and be a resident, and I got arrested before I could go. And I have an appointment soon to make my Tudat Zut.
So how is Crossroads helping you?
Like I said, when I was in jail, I was sitting there and didn't know what I was going to do. I was very worried, and they told me I was looking at about 3 to 4 years. And one day the boss came to see me and said that she wanted to give me a social worker. She wanted to help me and do what she could to help me in life, to try and get me out and to put me on the right direction.
Were you actually convicted and sentenced?
Basically, yeah, I got Mandela Din. They wouldn't even let me be outside of the holding place. They made me stay there until my final court case. And because of the help from the Crossroads, the court and the judge was convinced that I could go to a rehab. And it's only because of the Crossroads. If not, I would have stayed in jail and I'd still be there today.
What's the situation today?
I finished rehab almost 2 weeks ago. I'm on house arrest at the moment. From 8 in the morning to 8 at night, I'm allowed outside. From 8 at night to 8 in the morning at the house. I go twice a week to the probation officer for urine samples and to talk with her. I see my social worker once a week as well to talk with her, have a meeting with her. And, you know, thank God I'm in another 10 days, I'm clean a year. And I can honestly say if it wasn't for the Crossroads, I wouldn't have even been able to do what I'm doing today. I work, thank God. I live with my family.
Well, you have a job?
Yeah, I'm working in the yeshiva at the moment. And I have, like, odd jobs here and there, but the main job that is really working for me is working at the yeshiva at the moment. And in a month's time, I'm moving to another place in Israel with my family. You know, I have in another 3 months court. And if I respect the regulations of the house arrest and I stay clean and do everything I need to do, maximum, they told me I'd get community service because I still didn't get punishment as such.
Are you determined now to stay clean?
100%. I know that at the end of the day, not even myself, but my family suffered so much. My parents have been through it with 2 kids already and now with me. And I know they've suffered so much that for me, I can't see them suffer again.
Are they in England?
Yeah, but hopefully, please God, they want to come and live in Israel and be with their family. All their kids are here now. You know, all their kids are married apart from me, and they all have families, so they don't have anything to live for in England, you know.
Well, thank you very much for being so frank with me and telling me your story, and I wish you well. Thank you very much, David.
No problem. Thank you very much.
We've now been joined by a young lady. What's your name?
My name is Faith.
May I ask your age?
21 years old.
You're here at Crossroads, and there must be a reason. What brought you here in the first place?
I guess I was leading a certain lifestyle that was harmful to me during my early teenage years, and I found this place through one of my quote-unquote friends of mine, and I found Crossroads to be not as threatening as my home, but not as dangerous as the streets. So,
can you elaborate and tell me what exactly it was that went wrong?
I guess I rebelled against society and against my family, and I decided to explore my newfound freedom by harming myself, including self-mutilation, starvation, alcohol and drugs, and lack of boundaries, running away from home, and just being with the wrong people, just everything just to harm myself while thinking that this is real freedom.
And how did you get money for food and to sustain yourself, and where did you stay?
I went home once a week to change clothes or do laundry or just to you know, get the feel of home again. And I did get food either through Crossroads or through friends who had their own place. Many times I slept in the streets, especially when I was 16 and 17 years old. I slept in Kikarcion under the bank there, and I slept in 24-hour bars in town, and I slept in stairwells and things like that. I also slept at friends' houses when I could.
And when you go home and see your parents, did they help you?
They tried, but I am an adult now, and they have come to realize that they can bring me to the well, but they can't make me drink. And I have to actually ask for help and really accept the help in order for them to help me.
When you were living out in the streets, how did you sustain yourself? How did you find the money to live?
I didn't have money. I went weeks without money. I got free alcohol, free drugs.
Is there a place where one can get that free?
I just had a lot of friends who had the money and didn't mind parting with it for whatever reason, whether it was because the way I looked, the way I acted, a smile here, flirting there, that was it, basically. Or just in the name of being friends, because friendship and loyalty is very big in the street because you don't have much else other than yourself. So out of, I guess, loyalty for a friend in the crew, they bought me my drugs and my alcohol and gave me a place to crash.
And you've now finished with taking a drink and drugs, have you?
Hopefully for the last time, yeah.
When did you use these things the last time?
That was 39 days ago.
I was still counting days. Well, I hope that you can stay clear of that. Is this the first time that you've come off, or have you tried this once before?
This is the umpteenth time that I've tried to quit. I've been in and out of recovering from this, I guess you can call it disease, of alcohol and drugs and self-destruction since I'm 17. I've been in and out too many times. Hopefully this is the last time that I'm out.
You been in trouble with the law?
No, never. I did have issues with police, but not because of me, but just because of other people getting into trouble, but never because of my own issues. I never did hard drugs. I was never caught smoking or drinking underage. Either I was careful or God loves me.
When you went back each time to doing the same things again and again, how did that happen?
I think it started out by hanging out with the wrong people and just going to the wrong places, and I guess going back to old behavioral and thinking patterns and not catching myself and not asking for help, not praying to God, not looking for a God to believe in at all, which I find it helps me a lot, get clean and sober.
And how does Crossroads help you? What did they do for you?
Okay, when I was 17, I had either weekly or biweekly sessions with a social worker here. And in the beginning, I felt that I was weak and stupid and sissy for going back to the stupid social worker scene. And then eventually I developed a very close relationship with her. And one day I was under the influence and I attempted suicide when I was 17 and a half. And my friend stop me in the middle, and she called my social worker. And I spoke to the social worker on the phone. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, and she had woken up for me in the middle of the night just to help me out because I was in trouble. And she had me stop for the night and to meet up with her at 8 o'clock the next morning. And then once that conversation would be over, I can decide what I want to do with my life. And I spoke to her, and she helped me get help. She helped me go into rehab. And she also kept in touch with me through the period that I was in rehab.
You were in a rehabilitation center, were you?
Yes, I was.
Who sent you there?
Crossroads social worker got me in there. She offered me this suggestion, and it was only because she was the one who suggested it to me that I actually think about it.
And now you are determined not to fall back into that old lifestyle, I take it.
I still come to this to Crossroads Center for advice. And for help either with an apartment or a job or decisions in life that that happen when, I guess, when a teenager grows into an adult, that happened to me. And I have other problems than I had then, but Crossroads still helps me. I know my time's running out here, but I'm milking my time here for, you know, the most that I can.
You must have made a lot of good friends among those circles where you were hanging out in the bad times. Do you miss them?
I still see them once in a while, and I realize that they've changed and I've changed. Some of them are still stuck in their ways. Some of them aren't. We've all grown apart. We've all grown different. I'm not in touch with many of them. I do see them, but we don't have much to do with each other anymore. We don't have that much in common.
Isn't that dangerous to go back into those circles and see those people?
Well, some of them are like me, that they got out of it. Two of them are married. One of them has a baby and another one on the way, and another one, another one's in college. And people grow up, and some of them are still stuck in their ways, and I don't hang out with them, those that are still there.
Well, Faith, thank you very much for having been so frank and told me your story, and I wish you every success in the future.
Thank you.
Karen Green, you founded the organization, but who's involved in keeping it going and who helps with the finances?
Well, when we first started, there was a steering committee including every government organization and nonprofit that works with teenagers at risk. We had funding through those different organizations. After a few years of being open and becoming more independent, in January we made a decision to become our own independent facility. So we are now a registered nonprofit here in Israel, and the fundraising is done and has always been done by the staff here at Crossroads Center.
Some listeners to this program may wish to contribute. Can they do it via the website, or how should they contact you?
The website is the best answer, not just because they can get the information there if they would like to write a check in dollars and where to send that in America, if they want to write a shekel check, where to send that, or if they want to pay by credit card, there's a way to do that through the internet site.
Well, thank you very much. You're doing a wonderful job. Well, the website of Crossroads is www.crossroads.org. You know, the problem for Israeli children is also acute. According to an article by Ruth Iglash in last Friday's Jerusalem Post, the National Council for the Child points to an alarming number of children at risk, which has risen by 40% since 2000. And one organization puts the figures at 330,000 children, 8,000 of whom have so far been removed from their homes by social services and placed in a variety of frameworks, including boarding schools, group foster homes with foster families, and so on. More places are needed very urgently.
Although this program was made in July 2009, it is as relevant today as it was then. But in next week's program, I shall bring you an update of how that commendable organization has developed. Walter's World brings you news, information, and commentary that you will not hear anywhere else. And I am not under instruction what to say or how to say it. What you hear is as I see it. Look out for future reports developed that include Israeli lone soldiers who are not halachically Jewish, and the inner workings of Hatzalah, whose medical first responder bikes you see everywhere, as well as new interviews with international personalities.
Now, at this point, I wanted to bring you excerpts from a comedy event by some stand-up comedians who came specially from the U.S. to perform in aid of Crossroads, the organization we just spoke about. Well, much of it was interactive with the audience and not really suitable for broadcast, and quite frankly, at best, it was humor that was designed exclusively for an American audience, and you know what, I didn't understand it, I listened to it all, and I was thoroughly bored. There was just one glimmer of light that raised a smile from me when one of them told of a football team in a strictly orthodox school and that they even had cheerleaders. Asked if they were cuties, he said he didn't know because they were behind a machitza, a dividing curtain. That was the only thing that made me smile.
And now I have to end. I hope to be back again next week with more news, views and interviews from Israel and the rest of the Jewish world. Until then, this is Walter Bingham, wishing you well in all you undertake. And of course, one task that is important in this cold weather is to check if your elderly neighbor is warm enough. So many suffer from hypothermia because it's often a question of heating, food or medicine. Thank God it's not you. Goodbye.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar. I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom!
Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dax, and I'm calling for the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dax from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.